Excellent. Hello, and welcome to this non-persistent VDI. Today session, we're going to be talking about how to optimize your environment using application virtualization and user experience virtualization. So if you're in the right spot, great. Fantastic. If this isn't might be the right spot for you, that's OK. Stick around. You might learn a thing or two. And we're happy to have you. So thank you for coming today. Perhaps you have, how many of you use VDI today? Great. How many of you want to use VDI today? Absolutely perfect. Excellent. So in pooled VDI, you have a couple of really good benefits. First is that you can, what we're trying to do is with pooled VDI is we're trying to get a simple base image, right? As simple as possible, as small as possible. One of the other benefits of VDI is to enhance your management. You're supposed to be able to keep your image small and be able to keep your applications there, and everything should be fine, right? The other type of VDI that people use today, and how many of you use pooled VDI today? A few less. How many of you use dedicated VDI? Okay, great. So as you know, dedicated VDI is great because your users can, it's basically just like having a physical desktop, but in a data center. They log on, their experience goes with them. That's not exactly always true for your pooled VDI. Now, a few of the things that are less than ideal about the VDI experience is, first, you have to republish your applications every time if you're in a pooled VDI scenario, if you're using application virtualization UEV up to this point. The second common challenge you have between both dedicated and also between pooled is that you can't go outside the physical, you can't go outside the data center to your physical devices. That's a kind of a big deal if you want to have a common experience, if you want to have your users be able to log on to their physical environment and then for a different reason go and log on to your VDI experience and have their settings and customizations and their whole experience go with them. That's not possible today. The second thing that happens is as you realize that you have to put more things into your VMs, especially for dedicated VDI, that VM starts to bloat and get bigger and bigger, especially if you have 1,000 users and every single one of them has installed Office. Then there are technologies out there like the dupe and things like that that'll help. But what if you could minimize that today? The second thing that happens is as your logon times get faster or get larger, then you're also your login times get slower, especially if you have a big roaming user profile, for example, that has to come in. So that can take minutes, if not, you know, a long time for your users to log on. What if you could eliminate these issues almost entirely, maybe minimize them, let's just say, and combine the benefits of both in a single experience? So that is what we're here to talk about today. So essentially, what we're talking about is the ability to maximize your VDI pool utility to allow users to keep their experience, whether they're in the data center or out, and to enable a faster logon experience. And this is accomplished via UEV and AppV in pooled VDI. So much like a cooking show demonstration, I'm going to show you the results for how this can happen. And then we'll spend the rest of our time going into details about how to make this work. So what I have is I have Excel, and I have it basically outside of my data center. This is outside of my VDI experience. And I'm just going to go in and do a customization or two. Right? I don't know about you, but I use a lot of tables in editing and inserting. Let's see, where's my insert? Columns and rows. Okay, so there I have some edits up here that are pretty visible, you can see. So this is my customization. Your users can go in and spend lots of time customizing this to be perfect for them. I'm just going to do a couple really quick just to give you a flavor. Now, what you'll see is that we have this is my VDI session, and I have my VDI zero running. I've logged out and logged back in again, and if we run out to see, we can just go out and look to see where it's at, just so that we can see that I'm not doing any magic here. So here's my hard drive. So it's out in program data. And I go into Microsoft and Windows and RD virtualization host, and you'll notice that I have this VDI. So I'm just going to go and see how big it is right now. And it's about 24 gigabytes or so. And we're going to look to make sure that that didn't grow over time after we go off and use this experience a little bit. So now what we're going to do is we're going to go into here, and we're going to say go. And what's happening is that I am now effectively, I'm outside my data center, and I'm logging on to my VDI session. And what I have is I have a very small image that has just the necessities. I have an operating system. I have a couple of agents installed for UEV and AppV. And I have pre-installed my Office package because it's huge. And you'll notice that, and you can see this is actually true because these guys are still loading up. And that was actually about 30 seconds. And now you'll notice in just a second or two more, that'll happen is we'll get a couple of applications that'll come in. And while those are coming up, I'm going to open up my Excel to show that we actually did, in fact, preserve our settings. And so I'm just going to open up a new package again. And you'll notice that we have our settings there as well. And if I, just to show you that this is not smoke and mirrors, we'll go back and we'll add just a couple of random ones now just for fun. Already have that one. Let's add filter and freeze panes. And we'll close this guy out. And oh, and you'll see in the background what's happening is that my Adobe application and my Notepad++ have come down in the background, installed, and now I can use them. And so now here's Notepad++, fully AppVed. Our Excel was fully AppVed. And you'll see that I have some plugins here as well, taking advantage of connection groups. So that way, my application and my plugins can all share the same virtual virtual environment, or VE, and I can now integrate the two together very easily. So if I close this down now, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to sign out. And what's happening on the back end now, as you might expect, is that we have a VE that is running, and now it's turning itself off, restoring itself, and going back to the clean image again, just like you would expect of a clean VE to do. And if we go back now, you'll see that my properties, if we go back here again, will be about 24 gigabytes for the whole folder again. And the cool thing about this is that if we, I forgot to do it, but I can do it later. But if you go in and we start using, if we go back and look at the disk space while the usage of the VDI is happening, while people are using it, it's very small increments because we're not, because we don't cache everything, and I'll talk about how we do that in just a minute. So that's the magic. Now, how do we do that? So it comes back to being able to maximize your pool utility, keeping your user's experience fast, and a fast logon. The first thing we're going to discuss in more depth is how to maximize your VDI pool utility. And what we hear from customers, especially one big customer, they said the reason why they went off and bought UE application virtualization, the reason why they're deploying it to thousands and thousands of their desktops is because before, maybe some of you can relate to this. How many of you it takes about a year, 6 months to a year to roll out an application? I can see a few hands, a couple nods. Okay. And what they found is that when their execs, the C-suite, when they went back and said, well, what's our return on investment of the applications that we're pushing out that take a year, is that they found that those applications were already obsolete by the time that they got them deployed through the, because they had to go through a lab environment, make sure they're okay with a couple of people, make sure that the investment was fine. Then they'd have to go out to a POC, right, proof of concept with a 500 to 1,000 users, and then they would scale out if everything was fine at that point, and there'd always be a few hiccups. Maybe you can relate to that. And so what they found is that they could significantly reduce the time to get an application to their customers by using UEV in pooled VDI in this way. And what they're able to do then is be able to get, not take a year to get the application out to the users and get the ROI that way, but they would actually be able to dramatically reduce that and be in a period of a couple of months maximum. And they said they were in most cases able to do it almost in real time, because their POCs could be much more limited, and they could pull applications out that had much tighter control over the applications. We are announcing today that application virtualization at V5 will be releasing a Service Pack 3 very soon. We actually entered into escrow today, so we are within very, very, very soon timeline of getting it into your hands. We don't have bits today, but it's coming very soon. And let's start at the left. So one of the things that we did in the spring was we released the spring update. It's also called Hotfix 4. How many of you have played with the spring update? Oh, you gotta get it. It's awesome. So we did a lot of things like we've been listening to you, our customers, and the things that we put into it were things like streamlined our performance. We actually did a lot of work to make sure that our performance was good in our service pack. We heard feedback that said, hey, you know what, it seems to be not as fast as your previous versions, and we want you to improve that. We spent quite a bit of time in working on that problem, and the people that have used it have told us that it's actually fast enough, and it's actually pretty good. So now they said, stop working on performance now and give us more features. And so we did that. The other thing that we did is we heard from you that our many of you have made significant investments in application virtualization 4.6 or 4.5. And it's a significant, really, investment to go from 4.6 to 4.5 because you have to convert all your packages or repackage or resequence all of your packages again. So in our spring update, we spend a lot of time in going out to a small number of very vocal and very large customers, and we said, give us your packages. We want to understand how to make all the packages for everybody better. So we'll take your 1,000 or so applications and we'll go and make them work inside of our package converter. So we have a package converter that goes from 4.5 to 5.0. And we didn't get 100%, but we got them very close. We got them to about 80%. Yes, we'll take a question. Can you say that again? So the question is the converter still supported or is it still not? Oh, so the question is the package converter that Microsoft ships supported or not? And the answer to that is, of course it is. Now the converter might tell you that for a small percentage of your packages that it cannot convert them because it's doing things that are specific that we couldn't handle through automation. And in those cases, you'll have to go back and resequence. But we went back and we tried to get a large number of those. Now, if you find that you're having issues with your package conversion, we're actually interested to make that easier for you in the next coming up, because we want to make sure that the transition between 4.5 to 5.0 is as painless as possible. We recognize it's not going to be entirely painless, but it's we want to help make that as painless as possible. So we're actually listening and looking for people who are having a lot of issues. Come talk to us. We want to help you as much as we can. So then we heard also from our customers that they wanted the ability to do some things better with Office. And the Office integration experience with our Office deployment tool, or ODT, they wanted to make that better. So there is a whole presentation tomorrow by Britton Zerker, and I've got a slide with the time and everything that I'll share later. And he's going to be talking about a lot of things, but a few of the three key things will be shared computer activation. How can you exclude a package like Word or Excel from your product? Let's say that you don't need those, or a certain group of your customers don't need them. How can we do that? And then also, if you want to deploy multiple packages of Office to your enterprise, then you can use multiple package IDs. Now, let me just state, because he's going to go over this, and I'll go over this a couple of times as well, that the supported Office and AppV stance for Office 2013 is one package published on a machine that's globally packaged, or globally published, sorry. So one globally published package per machine. So take that into consideration as you are making your deployment plans, et cetera. So then we get into the application compatibility, and really this is all about customer requests, things that we heard. So we heard from a few of our customers that, you know, the preview viewer is a little flaky. And so we looked into it and we said, oh, we understand why. And so we did some improvements and enhancements to make that better experience for you. One other thing we heard is, you know, at VTeam, one of the things that we really don't like or we're not comfortable with is the fact that if someone goes in as a standard user, they can go and publish or sync, they can publish, self-publish themselves user-specific packages. And we thought about that for a second and went, oh yeah, I can see how you'd want more control over what the users can do on their machine in terms of being able to take a package that's in the catalog that they might not be entitled to and publish it to themselves. So we enabled a policy and a configuration option called do not self-publish or only self-publish as admin, and I'll show you that one as well. Another area that we heard your feedback on was in terms of the Oracle client, or not, we had some products which didn't account for long paths. And so if we had long paths in our virtualized experience, we have two GUIDs, it goes out to about 100 and something characters. And some applications say, well, actually I only will allow my paths to go out to 100 and whatever characters plus N, not very many. And so we looked at the code and we said, well, what's going on there? And we fixed quite a number of issues for applications that were having issues like that. And so we made enhancements there as well. How many of you are familiar with PVAD? Who's familiar with PVAD? So we got a few hands out there. How many of you are confused with PVAD? How many of you have done sequencing? Okay, we had a few more. How many of you were confused when you saw the PVAD? Yeah, a little bit. We have a couple of blogs out there. Some people say use it, some people say don't. We actually went back and we said, well, why do we even have PVAD? And we realized that it was really old, and it went back to supporting an application called WinZip back in 4.6, because way back in the Softricity days, they realized that they needed to have a way to write to the virtualized space, and they didn't have one. So they created this thing called PVAD. And it's kind of persisted over time, and no one kind of understood why it was still there. So we did a test, and we removed PMAD from sequencing, and we sequenced a lot of apps. And we realized that we fixed a few bugs or a few things that we saw, and at this point, there's almost no reason. There's actually one reason that you need PVAD that we're aware of. And so what we've done is that we've hidden the PVAD in your first sequencing experience, so that way it's not confusing. And then if it doesn't work, we have a command line switch in the sequencer that will turn on the PVAD experience again. Now let me be clear. If you have existing PVAD, we'll continue to support the existing PVAD path and that functionality. So if you need to do an update or an upgrade, ATV5 Service Pack 3 will continue to maintain and will continue to persist that, that functionality. The next thing we heard from a lot of our customers was, you know, this connection group thing, it's really cool that you can now combine packages into a single VE, but it's super hard to maintain, right? If you have, because what you have to do, how many of you are familiar with connection groups? A few of you. So connection group is really the thing that is, is an XML file that you define, and in it you put the, you put packages that you want to share the same virtual environment. And so the connection group really allows you to merge bubbles or to start being more integrated in your processes. And so we got some really great feedback about that. Another thing we heard was, you know, now that we're using connection groups, if I have two packages and they have common directories, but not common files within the directories, then the one of the two apps doesn't just stopped working. And so we looked at that and we realized that we needed to merge the root directories and not have last write or win, but now integrate the two directories so that way all the files came in, so that way both plugins would work in the right way. So that was another thing we fixed. Another thing that we heard, how many of you are familiar with the run virtual key? A lot fewer. Okay, so the run virtual key is a key that allows you to take a native application and run it within the context of a virtual space. So that way you get around having to, the need for sequencing your app. So what we did is that we heard, we implemented a global run user key where you had to have a global package with a global native application or global packages and native applications. And we heard, well, why can't we do this for a user package? And so we have now enabled the run, the user-based run virtual key in our SP3 as well. So getting more detailed into what is a connection group. So you basically have, in previous versions, you have this ability, where's my, right there. I guess it's not working. Oh well, so what you have, what we had before was the stuff in black. You have the global, so you're, you can have a global published connection group, which has entirely globally published packages. They all had to be mandatory, meaning that they had to have, you had to be explicit about what version you had. You had to be explicit about all of your packages had to be on the box published before you could have a connection group. If you had user entitled, all of those packages had to be user published and they had to be explicitly versioned and they all had to be published as well. Now this made it very interesting because it made it so that way if you had a very frequently changing package that changed once a month or faster than that, then what ended up happening is that you were saying, okay, I'm going to have to disable my connection group, remove my connection group, update the connection group with a new version, republish the package, re-add the new connection group, and enable the connection group, and now everything would be working. That seems like a lot of steps, doesn't it? So what we did is that we said, okay, fine. We will now make version ID optional. So you don't have to be explicit about that. And what that does is that it will take the latest package in your app catalog that, and will say, that's the one I'm going to use and include in my connection group. If it's not there, then it just ignores it and everything's happy. It will if it's optional. So an optional package means it can either be on the box or not published or added, and it's fine. If it's mandatory, then it follows the same rules. We implemented this in such a way that we won't break your existing connection groups. So that way, if you have mandatory, if you have a previous versioned connection group with a previous schema, then everything's fine. If you have a new schema, then you can use this functionality or you don't have to. The next thing that we did is that we added this concept of a hybrid publishing model. So if you have a user published connection group, you can have either user published connection, user published packages, or globally published packages, and they'll work fine. So that means you, and the, really the thing about this is it goes back to, for example, an office context where you have to have a single, remember, globally published package per machine. So if you have a single globally packaged package, but then you have 100 or so you can have 100 or so plugins that could go across your entire enterprise. And it, this way you can have a single connection group that will support both all of your users, whether they, and it will handle it so that way if the package is published to them, it'll light up in automatically. And if it's not, then it then you're fine. Because they won't be entitled, they won't get it, and your connection group will be fine. So that means you can have very few connection groups and manage them very simply. You don't have to go through the, okay, I'm gonna update my plugin now, so let's go enable, disable, republish, update my connection group, add and republish, or add and re-enable the connection group. And this is an example of the new schema. So notice that we changed from the schema from 2010 to 2014, and the two real significant pieces of the schema are the version ID star, that's how you specify it if you're doing it by hand, and is optional is true is how you specify a package that's optional. So in this case, my package ID with my version ID, that's the old style, so that means it's mandatory. And the next two, the first one says you can have the latest versioned on the catalog, and it's optional, so if it's not there, doesn't matter. The second one says I have a very specific version, and it's optional. All right, so I'm going to show you a little bit about how this works. All right, so you can see that. Let's run to my... This is just a standard management console. This is the same one that I used before. And you'll notice that I have our client UI that I've already published. I also have Adobe Reader that I've published. I also have Notepad++. And, you know, a handful or so of plugins that, that I've already pre-published. Now, if we go back here to Notepad++, you'll notice that I have the plugins, right? You'll notice that I have, let's see, I have a hex reader, which I should have. There it is. There's my MIME tools. There's my... I don't have an HTMM, I don't have a location. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you, first off, locally, with one of my packages, that if you, oh, and I also wanted, I did that so I wouldn't forget. Before I jump into there, the, where'd it go? Require publishes admin is the new configuration item. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to say add appy client package. I'm going to give it a path to K12 RDS server. Appy packages. I'm going to run down here to, let's see, which one did I have? I think I didn't have the HTML. Correct. And so now I'm going to install this guy. I'm going to first add it to the box. And now that it's added, now I'm going to publish it. So I'm going to do a get appy client package all. And I'm going to do HTML. You'll see that there it is. And I'm going to do publish dash appy client package. Here we go. So now it's published to user. Oh, but I think I might have put it into a pending state because, oh no, it should be fine. And you'll also notice that I have a get appy client connection group. And so this is my Notepad++ connection group. It contains all of those connections, and I'll show you what those look like in just a second. So now, let's run over here, and it, I think I might have messed up because I have my Notepad++ on. Yes. There we go. And I messed it up because I had it open when I did it. If I go ahead and reboot, or next time when I publish, it should be fine. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to quickly unpublish and republish. Make sure that that is not on. Okay, now it should work fine. And there's my HTML editor. There you go. See, so I didn't have to go through and add and do anything with the configuration group. All I had to do is go and enable the publish the new package, and the connection group automatically knew that it was there, added it to the correct VE, and everything's happy. And we can also do this through the AppV server. Now, we haven't updated the AppV server since SP1, so we realized that in order to enable this new connection group experience, that we needed to do some improvements and light up the AppV server to do this. So, how many of you are familiar with the AppV server? Do I need to go a little bit deeper? A few of you? Okay. Actually, quite a few. Excellent. So the AppV server is our product that comes with AppV. You basically have three stages of the AppV server. You have a backend. It has a management server with a SQL database. You have a publishing server that then will interact with your clients. And then you have a reporting server, which also has a SQL client to it as well. The AppV management server, you can have basically one management server per 50 publishing servers if you want to really scale. We've got a great white paper out there about how we scale out to the enterprise. And it's basically, we basically have tested AppV and know that we'll scale about to 1 million clients with 50 publishing servers and one management server, depending upon your bandwidth and your hardware and things like that. And we have that all specified and spelled out in that paper. So if we look at our connection groups, so this is the AppV server. We'll look at our Notepad++. You'll notice that we have this idea of connections. And I actually want to just do a dummy one just to show you what you do if you wanted to do something. So this is a test connection group. And you'll notice that it's unpublished right now. And now I can go and edit and add packages. So just because it's a test one, I'm just going to add a couple. And you'll notice that here is where you can specify whether you want it to be optional or whether you want to have any version. And really, when we say any version, we really mean latest version in the catalog. And the other thing that we did in the AppV server, this was something that we heard, is that, hey, I want to be able to change my priority. I want to be able to control that for my connection groups. Can you allow me to do that, please, inside of the AppV server? So now you can do that right through the AppV server. And so I'm not going to save this one, but I'm just going to use this one. And so then you go ahead and entitle it. And so you just go and say, I want it to go out to these users. So I say corp, for example, corp admin. Then I do a check. It grabs the right guy. I can grant him access. And now everyone that's part of that security group. Now, one thing about the server is that it will allow you to use distribution groups, but don't do that. It blows up very badly. What will happen is that it will try and push down the package, but on the client it says, oh, this isn't a security group, I don't know about it. It's something we know is there, something we're working on. We just didn't quite have enough time in this release to get to it. So you just delete and then go with that. Perfect. So now we have packages. Now, one of the things that we're going to do a little bit better job documenting in our next release is this concept of dynamic configurations. How many of you are familiar with dynamic configurations? So how many of you are familiar with the OSD? Okay, a lot more. So dynamic configurations are the equivalent of the OSD in 5.0. So in our dynamic configurations, you can do things like go in and basically look at we can go look at the default. So you can go and choose what applications are enabled. You can go and add shortcuts or enable shortcuts. So this is really great if you want to go and, let's say that you want to have your, this is a very common scenario that we hear. I want to be able to go have a different shortcut for my LO, for my line of business application, which is specific to developers, to testers, and to production. So, and you can do that within the OSD. You can also do that within dynamic configurations. The one kicker about using it through the AppV server is that it only allows you to do it for user published packages or your user configuration and not the machine configuration. So just keep that in mind when you're working with that. That tends to be an item of contention that we've heard. We heard it late enough that we weren't able to make a change or to do something about it, but it is on our backlog. We are thinking about it. So all you do, if you want to go back, so we can go say close, you can add file types. Advanced, you can then export, and you can also import. So you can export this out to your system, and let's say you wanted to add scripts. We have execution points built in at VE launch, at publishing time, so that way you can add your custom scripts. For example, if you need to install a driver, if you need to do something special to make an application work, you can do that via script inside of the deployment configuration. So what we're going to do is that we're just going to publish these three applications, or these three plugins that go with Notepad++, and we're going to say go. Well, we already did. But to really make it say go, we're going to go into our, this is where my AppV server lives. You basically wait about 20 minutes, but for my demo, I'm going to stop the publishing service and restart it to force the console to go and take the change. That way, when I do the publishing, it'll be in real time. And so now, I'm in the wrong VM. Now I'm in the correct VM. So now I can do a sync at V publishing. And that'll take a second. And now if I do a get dash all, and I can do a star NPP, because that'll be all my Notepad plugins. Let's just go make sure that we have the right one there. I think, though, there's my multi-clipboard, there's my HTML, there's my location navigation. So I've just added these three. And now when we launch the Notepad++, you'll see that now my application now has the location navigation, which it didn't before. It also has the multi-clipboard, which it didn't before. Very fast, very cool. Now, they will get, and you can avoid doing the sync, because you can also specify how you want to do your synchronization by setting it up. So by default, when you add a publishing server, you have to give it a URL to your publishing server, and give it a name. We assign an ID, and then you basically say, I want to be globally refreshed, either enabled, or you can say, I want to do it at logon enabled, and then you can tell it how long. By default, it's 0 days. You can also, I set it up to be 1 hour, just that way I get everything, show you that there can be a difference. By default, it doesn't do global refresh. Now, one of the things that we do, since now we have this concept of a hybrid connection group, which means you have a user connection group, user published connection group, with globally published and user published packages, is that we want to make sure that your globally published packages are on the box at the same time that your user published packages are, so that way when we create the connection group VE, virtual environment, that they're all there. So if you have the user refresh enabled true, we'll first do a global sync, and then we'll do a user sync followed by that. Now, I know we're all about control. And so the way to get around that, if you don't want that to happen, is that you turn, and if you want to control everything, is simply turn the user refresh enabled equals false and logon equals false. Do the same for the global refresh equals false on both those two configuration options. Then you can run a script, a PowerShell script, and say dash force. If you say dash force, then that overrides the sync enabled and allows you to control the sync whenever you want to do the sync. So that way you do a dash sync force without a global switch, we'll do the user. With the global switch, we'll do the global only. And it will only, and when you do the slash force for the user side, it will not also public or sync the global. You have to do that on your own to make sure that that's happy. So that's a dial that we've given you to make sure that you have plenty of control over that. Great. Let's talk a little bit more about management server. So the AppV server that we've talked about. What I just showed was the ability for you now to manage your connection groups, including adding priority, including adding a lot of functionality into the server. Now the cool thing about it, if you're using SCCM, that's cool. They actually already have a thing called virtual environments. And virtual environments are the same thing as our new and improved connection groups. So they already take advantage of that, and so you don't have to do anything different if you're already using as a configuration manager. Now, if you have prior clients in your server, our new server will support the old clients and the new clients. And so our recommendation, if you have to upgrade, is to go first upgrade the server, then upgrade the clients, then upgrade your packages. And what that'll do is that'll provide you with the most flexibility, and it will also make sure that you can roll out whenever you're ready and ready to do so. Okay, so the next pillar. We spent a lot of time talking about AppV. Let's talk a little bit more about AppV, but we're going to talk about it from the context of shared content store. So shared content store really makes us maximize the utility of our VDI. And so one of the things that you can do is that either in the old days, you could either optimize for speed, right, by mounting the image, or with shared content store, you can maximize for storage. And the default is to do a fault cache, which means that you're going to trickle down the bits, and then as you need them, it'll get you just the right bit that you need. Shared content store means that nothing is written to your image at all. Everything is in everything is ran from memory. And if you go to the presentation on Friday, I'll steal a little bit of their thunder here. I hope they don't mind. But what we found is that the performance that you get is actually a little bit better with shared content store than with fault caching. And so, because we don't have to do that extra write, that saves us time, and we're able to get that back in performance. The other thing that's really cool about this is that if you have 1,000 or 2,000 users that are connected to your VDI non-persistent sessions, and if you have to have Office there, we still say, go ahead and pre-install Office. Set this shared content store configuration to be enabled. And what happens is that we don't store hardly anything to the disk, and so your footprint still stays very small. And you can maximize your ability to have a lot more VDI session pools. All right, so let me explain how this works. So historically, we have an AppV package. We recommend that you use FB0 for your packaging data. That puts down all of your shortcuts, the registration data, the sparse files as well. And then what typically happens, like I said, is that we pull is that you have the rest of the AppV package, which comes down, and that can either be mounted or it can be fault cached, so that way you get 100%. With shared content store mode, what we do is we pull down the FB0, and then all of the color disks are all stored in memory, so we only stream down in memory what you need at that time. So it's about 3 to 5% of your AppV package size. Use this when you have very good connections in your data center. This is not a very good experience if you want to take a laptop and take it onto an airplane. Not so good, because you probably won't be able to stream while you're disconnected, and that streaming will also be very slow. So in those cases, use fault caching on your laptops. A recommendation is to use the mount, to mount your packages, so that way they're 100% there when you have to go disconnected. All right, so here is a demo. Let me just get it set up here. Just have to start a VM. switch over. And it's starting for me here. Let's see. There we go. Okay, so I wanted to make sure that this VM was pristine because this is basically just a clean VM. All that it has on, all that it has on it is UEV and AppV, and that's it. And it's been configured. And I'll show you that we have nothing installed at all. Still warming up. There we go. So you'll see that we have nothing here after it wakes up a little bit more. There we go. It just took a second. We also don't have any configuration groups. And so here's what I have turned on all my VMs. So that way I can really maximize the amount of VMs that I have. If you notice, I have about 6 VMs running on this laptop, and I've been able to maximize my utility by turning Share Content Store on to be able to keep everything on a very small, on a normal size solid-state drive. So the other thing that you'll notice is that, so what we're going to do is that I'm going to go ahead and let's do an add AppV client package. This is going to take a minute or two to do because Office is kind of big. 2K12 RDS server. Okay. All right. So I'm going to add the package. Again, this just takes a minute or two. And what I want to show. While this is getting up there, I will pull this up. What I'm going to show is the amount of space that we actually take. This Office package that I have will take about 150 megabytes on disk after I publish it. Let's go to program data. If you're interested to figure out where all the AppV packages live, it's actually here. And so we have this guy right here is probably the one. And so you'll notice that we have, this is our new AppV package that I've just put on the box. And after we add it, then let's see how big this package is. It's still adding. Did I pause it? Oh, I did. Whoops. So it's about 26 megabytes is all. And so the registration data is really tiny, very small, very sparse files. And it's not until after you actually publish it that we'll get to see a lot more of the files come down. Again, this just takes a minute or two. So maybe I can take a question or two while we're waiting for this to go. Any questions out there? Yes.
It's about the connection.
So the question was, when can we expect to see the improvements in connection groups in Configuration Manager, right? Okay. So the answer to that is Configuration Manager already has an improved connection group experience called Virtual Environments. So if you go into Configuration Manager and look at the virtual environments with application virtualization packages, then you'll see that they already do, you can already have version optional and package optional connection groups that they create on the fly through that experience. And so that's already there today. Any other questions? This is just taking a little bit longer than normal. Well, maybe what we'll do is we'll let that continue to go, And I'll go back to my VDI because I know that that's already published. And this is all I've done is that I pre-published. I did exactly what I'm going to do on my VM. It's basically just my clean image. I have shared content store mode turned on. I've added it to the box and I published it. And so this is going to be a non-persistent session pool again, so it's a clean image, 25 gigabytes approximately. And when it logs on, what we'll do is we will look to see how big is that package. After it decides to come live, there we go. So if we go to so here's program data, at V. I grabbed the right one. I think it's this one. Or not. Yeah, this is it. Okay, good. So we can look at this guy and say, okay, well, this guy is. Whoa, that is wrong. Oops. Having just a real, there we go. Okay, so now that it's published, and you'll notice that it's 4%. So we'll just go back to this one. So it's 4% published. We come back to this guy here. And that is really odd. Okay, I have to go back and figure out what's happening here. That must not be the right one. But that is. So it shows that I'm only 4% loaded. Oh, that's probably what it thinks that it needs. I'm not sure why I have so much more in there. It should be about 150 megabytes. And so then what happens is that then I'm going to publish it. Now it should publish fairly, just a minute or two more. And what you'll see, there we go, is that it's still at 4%. And now if we go and we say, let's go look at Excel. And what's happened, or should I say should be happening, that'll launch and load. And this guy should still be at 4%. So now we're going to say get client package, and it's still at 4%. So it's only using about that 150 megabytes of packaging. And so then what happens is that when I close it, we can then go turn it off. And we'll go turn off the SCCM. Set at V client configuration dash share content store. This is a little slow. turn it off. Then what we'll do is we'll say, we'll go and restart the service. Okay, this is not working. So I'm going to move on with this demo. Afraid that that one didn't work the way that I planned. But what you should have seen, and what I've seen happen in your real live environments, is that that 4% is really the thing that'll happen. And you're going to have 150 megabytes that will be put into your master image, and so that we don't have to put down the 2 gigabytes or the 1 gigabyte of data for those big applications. And then they stream down just as you need them, and they're fast. All right. Moving on then. So now let's talk about keeping your user's experience. How many of you have used UEV before? UEV users out there? How many of you have it in production? Excellent, a few of you. Perfect. So we announced our beta back in June, and it's publicly available. And what we did is that we've integrated Office 2013 support, which is something we heard from a lot of you, and we were able to get it in box. And one of the cool things about it is that if you have Office 365, which roams about a handful of settings, then we will ignore those settings and we'll continue to roam our thousands of settings that we do for Office. If you don't have it installed, then we'll do a couple of their 5 and we'll also do the thousands of settings that we do for Office. One of the cool things that we did is that we heard that the coolest feature that we have in terms of our Office settings that we do roam across our suite is the signature. So we actually did a little bit more work around the signature. We did the data before, but now we'll do data, plus we'll also roam your setting that you have. So if you have multiple or a single signature and you associate it to an account or accounts, we also will roam that selection process as well. That's new for 2.1. We added credential manager support in our beta that's live. And we also added the ability for the IT pro to backup and restore settings. So if you wanted to have that desktop setting that goes for you, for example, if you have multiple machines, you want to have one that's professional and one that's not, you can use the backup setting to backup that desktop so it doesn't roam to all of your other locations, and those settings will be backed up. And to do that, we have a profile. We have a profile type called backup that we've introduced. We haven't been sitting on our haunches since beta, and actually we're going to be releasing our UEV product very soon as well. We added a couple more items. Almost at every place that I go, people ask me, Aaron, okay, so it's great that you support SMB shares, but I need to get outside of my firewall. This is very common in EDU space, where your teacher gets a laptop, and you set it up for them, you hand it off to them, and then you never see them again. And so we're announcing support for a new sync method called external. And that allows you to use sync data engines like OneDrive for Business, or whichever one you want. OneDrive for Business, just an example, if you get any of them. And then you can get outside the firewall. And so what you do I'll explain in just a minute. The second thing that we do is that we also added a concept, since this is all about VDI, is if you have multiple data center or multiple collections, VDI collections, we now allow you to specify that I want this collection to have a set of settings that are different than this collection, but it will synchronize all of your settings within that collection to be the same. So it synchronizes all of your shell extension, all your shell settings, all of your Windows operating system settings. It'll do all those before the user logs on, and then makes it so that way they always have a consistent experience. Let's talk about sync methods for a minute. The one that we're talking about today is none. So if you're using VDI, use none. That's because what you can do is that it's specifically for data centers, VDI, RDS streamed apps. It's cool because it doesn't have a local cache. Now, it doesn't have a heartbeat. So that means that everything is basically in real time, and it's going from your spot, and the place of reference is on your data center. So the cool thing is that it, you have to have, the cool thing about it is that it's just in time. The downside is that you have to be connected, otherwise you lose your settings. So if you are going to use a physical device, then the recommendation is to use the sync provider for the default. And it does have a heartbeat, meaning that if you're not connected, no big deal. It'll catch the settings synchronization on the next heartbeat. The heartbeat is a scheduled task that runs about every 30 minutes. It guarantees eventual consistency. Now, if you don't want to use an SMB, but you want to use a OneDrive for Business or similar product, and you want to get outside the firewall, then use sync method equals external. And what that gives you is gives you a local cache that's managed by a sync engine provider. It only works like the NUN in that it only synchronizes on triggers. It doesn't have a timeout, so if you don't have a very good, well, you always have a great connection between your local box and your local box, right? But so therefore, it doesn't have a timeout, but that is typically very quick then, so you don't have any issues with latent logons. And then we guarantee eventual consistency as long as the synchronization provider that you're using, the OneDrive for Business, synchronizes the settings across. All right, so then we talk about credential management. We talked about how this is something that now we support. These are the settings that we do. The other key piece here is that it is all about enterprise persistent credentials. That's really the key aspect of this. So if you have a web credential or a personal credential, we don't roam those, but we will roam any persistent enterprise credential that you put onto the box. I'll give you a second to read this because this is just a kind of a long slide to read. All right, so we talked about getting the most out of your VDI pool to maximize utility. We talked about crossing the user experience. Now, one thing that I forgot to mention is that the UEV experience, actually, because it's just an SMB drive or a OneDrive for Business, it allows you to get outside of your data center. So if you have an SMB share that's common to your data center and to the rest of your network, if you have a DFS that's connected, UEV supports DFS. And so you can then get outside your data center, so that way if your users use a laptop someplace, or if they have a desktop and they go to VDI later, that experience just goes along with them. So now we're going to talk about how to get fast logon. The keys here for a fast logon primarily are around using mandatory profiles. UEV works great. We actually heard from a customer that, hey, you know what, we have VDI, but it's slow because we have to use a local or a default profile, and we know that you don't want us to use a roaming profile because the roaming profiles with VDI are super slow. And so you can create a mandatory profile. There are lots of topics about how to do that. I'm going to let you go off and find your favorite one and make it as lean as possible. The one aspect about mandatory profiles that you should be aware of is that there's a part of active setup that if you have your user active setup and your machine active setup different, then those can stomp on the UEV settings. So, because what happens is that the active setup process works after the UEV settings are already put down. And so since that happens, then the active setup launches and it kicks in and overwrites things like desktop images and so forth. So, but as long as they're the same in your policies, then you're fine. Again, make sure that you install only mission-critical software onto your image, keeping it as tight as possible. And then install the larger applications using shared content store to keep the size of your disk very small. So what are the benefits of having a small VM? Small VM means that you can really pack that data center and crunch as many VMs into your VDI session pool as you possibly can, thus making it this saving cost and being able to drive up performance. You can also You also get the ability, like we talked about before, of realizing that app's ROI faster. You also minimize the need to, also minimize the amount of patching you have to do to the master image. And so all of this is great benefit. Now, one of the cool things about the way that we do it is that if you go and create a new master image, you don't have to go and create a new package. Your app vSphere server will push down the packages, and as long as they work with the new patch, with the new patches that you put on your server, it's fine. And actually, it's cool because we'll go across any OS that you want to put out there. So that's definitely an advantage that our solution has. Now, one of the things that we also did to optimize your logon was to actually pre-cache the AppV publishing data, because that's where most of the size comes from when you're trying to copy down from the server. And so the way that we handle this is through a UPM. In this case, it's UEV. And so what we've done is that we have a template that you can just go get off of our template gallery, register the template in your VDI space. And what will happen is that this template then goes off, grabs the AppV configuration registration data and the publishing data, pushes it off into a central location, and then at logon time, it will then synchronize it down. Today what happens is that if you log on, we have a scheduled task which will synchronize your AppV publish data and register the apps, and it takes a couple of minutes to pull down the information, and worst case, and then your virtualized applications are ready to use. With this template, what happens is that we block the publishing data, block the synchronization, we then go grab the packages off of the settings store, which happens in seconds, and then we unblock the process, and then you're able then to go and update your publishing data, and it pulls down any new changes or pushes up anything that manages any discrepancies you have. And then the publish is basically a no-op for every other time that you do it. So it's very fast. It helps speed that up. This is what we publish. And you'll notice down here we have the URL to a whole content of how to do it. If you want to use UEV, it's very straightforward. But we also tell you how to do it if you have any other type of UPM that you want to use in this scenario. Great. So I'm going to quickly go over, run through how to set up your environment. Let me set up my machine here. Okay. So I'm going to talk to a few of the things that are key. So one of the things that, let's clear the screen. And so one of the things that you can do with your UEV is that you have to install the agent onto your image. It takes a couple of minutes. It's a couple of megabytes to install. The AppV agent is also the second thing that we recommend that you install. I'm not going to do that today. Instead, what I'm going to show you is how to quickly rebuild your UEV configuration using an import configuration package. So out here, we have I'm just going to show it this way because it'll be faster. So we have, you can export a file. You can export your UEV settings, and then it creates an INI file that kind of looks like this. Well, it looks exactly like this. And you'll notice that we have settings like we have a custom URL, so that way if you want to point people who are using UEV to your central web page for help. We also have the ability for you to customize your setting storage location path, use templates. We recommend that you pre-install all of your UEV templates that you could possibly have in your golden image. They're only, you know, very small little XML files. And then that way, if you ever add or if the user ever needs to use a UEV package, then we'll go and look to see if that template is registered. If it is, then we'll use it. This is where you can update your VDI collection, which is brand new. And then what you'll do on this side is that you'll use the, we have a thing called import UEV configuration. And you just give it the path to the configuration file. And then what it does is that it imports the information and updates your UEV configuration. And the one thing you have to, you should know is that the cool thing about that is that it makes you be elevated to run the import. So that way, it's computer settings that if you image your box, those are persisted in your VDI mode. Great. Cover that. Excellent. Oh, and so let me show you where you get the template from. So we have a really great gallery. We encourage everybody to go post ATFI recipes as well as accelerators if you want to. In the UEV gallery, we actually have, that's where we posted our 2013 Office templates. We also have our, down here below, we have our ATFI Microsoft authored. Let's go make sure I'm searching for that. We have down here, we have our Microsoft, yep, this one. This is the one that you want. It's the Microsoft authored UEV settings template location for the 5 client. That will help you to get a fast ATFI package. So, in conclusion then, it's all about maximizing your utility, keeping your experience, and having a fast log on. So, and that's how we can go forward to making a faster, more efficient, better VDI experience for our customers together using ATFI and UEV. I want to thank you for your time. I've got, we'll have additional sessions. I'll be at the booth today and tomorrow and then Thursday. And then these are some additional sessions that you can go to. I would really suggest that you go to the deploying BitLocker today, but also, let's see where to go. This one is a great session about Office. If you're interested in how do you use ATFI with Office, that's a really awesome session. And then these are the resources we have. More resources. Make sure that you do a evaluation. And here is our session. Thank you. I'll be here for about 3 minutes if you want to ask some questions, or you can come afterwards, or you can meet me at the booth. Thank you very much for your time.